Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Rolling. It's the Freedom Fiends. What it do, y'all? Happy third week in May.
It's my birthday.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, Michael Dean.
At least on the internet.
Yeah, on the internet. Your Facebook birthday, is it?
Well, you know, someone will actually be listening to this on my birthday. So, and, you know, my birthday is just another day. I'm 48. It's fun. I'm old.
It's fun. Why is it fun to be old, Michael?
I don't know. I think Ernie Hancock's that age or a couple years older.
Yeah, I think he's a few years older than you. Yeah, you guys we were talking about some 70-year-old man that started punching a Ron Paul supporter at some GOP function in Phoenix, and I wanted to make the comment that because he was talking about peak government and things like that, and I was like, maybe, but the old people love the peak government. They want to keep getting their free handouts. They don't want any government touching their Social Security.
And they have to be
they
protected
say that without
from,
any irony.
They have to be protected from the gays and the weed smokers and the brown people.
Yeah, yeah. So they don't want their government to go away. So I was going to say you, old folks, but then I realized that's a little bit too broad. So we'll say people over 70.
I don't feel like I'm old. And, you know, most of our fans are like 17 to 30. So I must be doing something right in that sense.
It's like Jay-Z says, 40 is the new 20.
Yeah. I think you become old when you stop being teachable.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're only as old as you're stubborn and statist.
You're only as old as your last hip hop joint.
When was your last hip hop joint?
Probably with you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't mean marijuana cigarette.
So you're about a year old then.
I mean songs that we dropped. Yeah,
yeah, dropping Mad Science is your
dropping
fond of
Mad Soda.
Mad Soda.
Yeah, I still say that. You said that.
Do you drop your Mad Soda all the time now?
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, liberty, I heard you. Freedom. I heard you had an old man moment with your coffee pot.
Oh my God. Yeah, I DJ was in the kitchen and she said, "Come in here, please." And I went in there and there she opened up the cupboard and there was a half full coffee pot, the cold coffee sitting in the cupboard, like where the coffee cups go.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, I didn't do this. And I'm like, I don't remember doing it, but I kind of remember doing it. I was just multitasking. That was my excuse. But really, that's like a senile old man thing to do, man.
Oh, I do that kind of stuff all the time. And I know exactly what you're talking about when the wife is like, Nima, come here. I always know exactly what's coming. I put the salt in the fridge or put the, I don't know, put the Tupperware of dinner in the drawer or whatever the case is.
I'm really glad that we have spouses that don't want to mess with us, because you could really mess with someone by doing that and then saying they did it. Confuse them.
That'd be horrible. You think a spouse would do that to somebody? Make them think they're going insane?
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's a joke in Peep Show. You know, maybe I'll marry her anyway and just hide her purse and make her think she's gone mad.
Yeah, I guess I need to watch that. Hulu's always telling me to watch that. They're like, Nima, you will like this show.
Every other show you like ends with, people who like this show loved Peep Show.
Yeah.
Arrested Development pulls that up, and Parks and Rec has that.
Yeah, Parks and Rec. In fact, most of the NBC shows I watch have that. I don't know if there's some kind of deal or some kind of focus group that caused that to happen or what, but... Yeah, maybe I should break down and give it a try. Watch the old Peep Show. I also apparently need to watch Entourage. I'm behind on my watching visual media, man. I've been too busy making audio media, I guess.
You've been copping out by going out in the real world, man. You got to get back to your TV and your movies.
I guess so. Real world. We went out to Mount Rainier the weekend. That's why I was gone for the live show. How did the live show go?
You'll never know. I'm eating carrots on the air.
I'll never know. All I have to do is listen to it.
You will. It went kind of slow at first because he'd never been interviewed before. And mm-hmm. by the end of it, it was great. But it wasn't. You weren't there. And I was tired. So it was not stunning.
Did you get some good callers?
Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah, the callers, I mean, they really make the Sunday show. I love that we have that ability for people who are fiends to call in and impress us with their fiend speak and their own digging of you know, tyrannies today and all sorts of great stuff. Oh, and their lovely stories about picking up hitchhikers and indoctrinating them.
Knives.
Yeah. I think I said that on a last week's cast, and our fiend who taught us about knives was like, I think I cried a little.
Yeah, especially because he wrote me in before that and said, you guys should say knives more. And I said, I don't know. We tried it. We ran it up the flagpole and just didn't salute it. It didn't, you know, it sounds good coming out of your mouth, but it just didn't sound good coming out of our mouth. And I never told Nima that. And then Nima said it, and the guy got, oh, that's so touching. So the reason I'm eating carrots is I had this friend of mine, Jared, who's an expert gun instructor and a libertarian, come down from Sundance this weekend, and he spent 3 nights here and 3 days, and we lived, breathed, and photographed media 24/7. It was kind of like me and Nima making the Guns and Weed movie, but instead of 6 months, it was all compacted into 3 days, which is like why I was up at 5:30, because I went to bed at like, I don't know, 6 p.m. or something, and to make up for lost sleep and got up. But like DJ was like, oh, you're having someone come over for business stuff. I'll go buy one of these deli trays that people have at meetings and stuff, you know, that has like the separate compartments of different kinds of vegetables and the little,
like the
dip
cube
in the middle.
Cheese and the cold cuts and all that stuff.
Yeah, like they have in that one scene in Breaking Bad where they have the meeting with the cartel. they actually have one of those. So we had it, but we were so busy we forgot to open it. So I don't want it to go bad. So I'm eating it right now. I'd rather be eating something that's, you know, more comfort food and protein. But hey, vegetables. Eat your vegetables, say the fiends.
Yeah, whenever kids ask why my dog only has one eye, I always say, oh, he didn't eat his vegetables.
And I told you that's statist reinforcement because, you know, well, I mean, it's not a bad thing to teach people that. But if you're going to lie to indoctrinate the kids, you should say it's because he listened to the state. You should say it's because he did what his teachers told him to. That's why he has one eye.
Right. I think we did come to that conclusion. I just haven't done that yet. So bad me. I'll go ahead and start to scare the little kids with horror stories about the state. Maybe that's what we need to do. You know, the state tells all these horror stories about the free market and laissez-faire and robber barons and, ooh, the evil capitalists are going to get you. So maybe we need to just flip that around. And
we need to make some Grimm's fairy tales about with good liberty messages to teach kids. Like, you know, the big bad wolf of the Fed will come eat you while you sleep.
Well, we had sort of started to do that. I started to write it, at least. You asked me if I wanted to write a thing where it was, Mommy, what's a gun license?
Yeah, it takes place in the future.
So I've got like 3 small pages of it, and I haven't given it to you yet. But that'll be a fiend fiction at some point in the future.
Fiend fiction. I like that. Fan fiction, fiend fiction.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
A fan did give us the idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was Lou, I think.
I think it was Lou, yeah.
Freedom beans.
So while I eat these vegetables, talk about the dime cards.
Oh, the dime cards. Yeah, we did an interview on Freedom's Phoenix, which sort of sounds like Freedom Fiends.
I noticed that for the first time this week.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to mention something like that, but Ernie talks a lot, so it was hard to get too many words
I interrupted him a couple times. It was fun. I had to try hard.
Yeah. Oh, it was a good interview, though. I mean, it's not like I get sick of Ernie talking, because he always has interesting things to say, and he says it in a really lively and engaging way. But part of the reason he wanted to have us on is because he's doing this dime card thing too, and we've been doing it too. And what it is basically these little plastic laminate cards with freedom-related images. For instance, ours are all Guns and Weed and Freedom Fiends images. You know, the little logo of me and Michael standing there on the hill, Michael looking all homeboy with his arms crossed, and some images of the girls in the Guns and Weed movie. And there's little silver dimes that you put in them, and you can hand them out or sell them. And it's a lot cooler. I think Ernie said it's like a business card that nobody's going to throw away. Because why would you throw away, you know, $3-4 worth of silver? You're not going to do that. And not only that, but you know, you do have to sell them for a little bit more expensive than the same piece of silver would be if you bought it, you know, with the spot price. But it's going to go up in value. I mean, it's precious metals, so eventually it'll be worth more when you compare it to Federal Reserve notes. So yeah, just a really great deal, a great way to pimp the fiends and keep our faces and our media out there. And also, the other great thing about it, because I think Michael was saying that, you know, if I gave it to my accountant, he just wouldn't get it. He'd be like, oh, you gave me a dime. But the thing is it's the foot in the door, because people will question it if they don't know that silver is worth more than it should be when it comes to, you know, even American currency from pre-1964. They'll be like, why did you give me a dime? You can explain to them. Well, because
it's worth $4.50.
Yeah, exactly. That's worth a gallon of gas. When Ron Paul said, you know, a gallon of gas for a dime, that's what he was alluding to, is the fact that that's what it cost in a dime that's actually made of silver, you know, a commodity that's worth something. So it brings up the idea of talking about fiat currency and the fact that those pieces of paper, they're not real.
Here's dimes, man.
That's dimes. You can hear the silver, baby.
Yeah, and the dime cards are cool. It's a great idea because it's like, it's very simple how they came up with it. Because these cards, the blanks, the paper blanks without the printing on them, or the little plastic things that they go in, are basically like something that coin collectors use to display coins when they're selling them, mm-hmm. or to keep them in their collection and not get finger oils on them. And they fit in your wallet. And, you know, this Don't Tread on Meme, these people who are connected with Freedom's Phoenix, Drew Phillips and company,
yeah.
have come up with this. I think there's another company, another bunch of young radicals that are doing it too. But they're great because it's a way to have, you know, real metal currency that you could fit in your wallet.
Yeah, yeah. Great idea. And also, I've always been upset when you go to metal shops, you know, coin shops, you know, places where you can go get your junk silver or your little 1 ounce silver bars or gold bullion that they usually have. It's always very status. You know, there's like collector's books of, you know, all the president's faces on metal and American flags and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I want to buy the silver to get away from the state. But when I go to the shop, it's nothing but status crap and promotion of the state. So I think it's beautiful that people are out there showing, hey, you know, the whole point of this is to get away from the state. It's anarchy. It's anarcho-capitalism. It's voluntarism, agorism. So
and it's fairly brilliant, because putting them in these dime cards, because what I think this is a reaction to is some liberty companies have come up with actual liberty silver and gold things, and somebody made the mistake of putting the words $1 on one, and mm-hmm. he's in prison now, and they confiscated $7 million worth of medals from his foundry.
Oh, yeah.
But
Liberty dollars, and they called him a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, there's no way they could do that with this, because this is money made by the American government. It's just kind of put in a little freedom, some freedom lingerie, kind of, you know, dressed up a bit.
Yeah, it's monetary judo. It's taking their own crap and throwing it back at them.
Yeah. Worms.
So you still got carrots in your mouth, Michael?
Yeah, I'll stop.
It's okay. Well, it reminds me of this thing I was thinking and never talked about. You know, people talk about the carrot and the stick, you know, incentives and punishments. I'm thinking in Lip Air, shouldn't everything be carrots? I mean, it'd be a carrots-only society. There'd be no need for the stick, right?
Well, I think when people say the carrot and the stick, they're saying, like, the carrot is an incentive and the stick is to hit you with. But
yeah,
actually,
exactly.
The carrot, it comes from carrot on a stick, which is putting a carrot on a stick with a horse you're riding to hold it in front of the horse. And the horse can never get to it, but he keeps trying to go to it because it's right in front of him, dangling. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I like either of those, but anyway.
Well, I like the concept of carrot only because I think implicit in accepting the state as your Lord and Savior, you accept the stick part. You accept the carrot and stick paradigm. You know, if you do the things the state tells you, if you go to public school and get your degree and follow all the rules, you get a carrot. If you don't, you get hit.
So we never said where to get the dime cards. There's a link now at the top of freedomfiends.com on every page that says Freedom Fiends Silver Dime Cards. You know, there's a bunch of links in with it, like bios, glossary, etc. It's one of those up there. And it's got the direct link to buy them. I actually bought 10 of them today. I was like, cool, man. Excellent.
Nice.
I'm going
to
give them to my friends. And but yeah, I was actually talking about one family member that if I gave them one, DJ said, she'd just be like, oh, so you gave me a dime for Christmas? Thanks.
Yeah, but then you could explain stuff to her. But
my dad would get it. My dad would get it because he's 90, you know? And he complained when they took money off the silver thing. So I'm going to give him a Freedom Fiends dime one for Christmas.
You should. Your dad hasn't necessarily stopped learning, and he's not the stubborn old man we had talked about earlier. Because you gave him Ron Paul's book, was it The Revolution?
And he loved it. I gave him The Revolution and The Fed, and he read them both and loved them, and he's voting for Ron Paul, you know, even though he doesn't think he's going to win, and, you know, and that the guys at his Rotary Club are going to think he's a domestic terrorist for talking about Ron Paul. But, Yeah.
People are scared of Ron Paul, man. They don't want their gravy train to go away. It's in their self-interest to hate on Ron Paul and to keep the status quo going. But those who aren't feeding at the teat of the state, it's nothing but Ron Paul, you know, if you think of it in a statist paradigm. I mean, obviously, I don't think that the state or political action is going to get you anywhere, but if anything, it would be Ron Paul.
Republicans are afraid of Ron Paul, too. Like your average, you know, old square voter are afraid of him because they think, oh, he's not going to protect me from the marijuana smokers and the gays. But actually, the people at the higher level, like the people running the world, which it doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican, they could care less about whether pot's legal or illegal. They could care less about whether the gays can marry, and they could care less about whether the immigrants can come in unfettered. If it served them to completely have the opposite view on it, they would.
Then why don't they? Because don't you think it would serve them to give us these little morsels, you know, as Ben Stone says, to give us a little bit of a pullback just so we aren't so...
Well, they do in a way, but it's often just contradictory to their public face. I mean, Bush opened up immigration a lot.
Well, see, what I think it is they... It gives them something that we fight each other over. So it's part of the divide and conquer philosophy. They'd rather have us bashing each other over these little side issues that really don't make a whole lot of difference in the grand scheme of things if you're not thinking of it in the larger context. But if you're thinking of it in the status context of these single issue voters, then that gives them reason to support the state because they want the state to push their own issue that they want to get in power. You know, your pro-lifers, your pro-choicers, your pro-gay marriage, pro-pot.
Well, Romney talks like, we got to round up them brown people and put a big fence around America until he's elected. And then he's going to, if he's elected, I guarantee he's going to loosen restrictions on immigration, legal and illegal, because all his friends own huge factories that they need. And, you know, big business wants open immigration because it's cheaper labor.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to another point, that when you're a politician, you say what people want you to hear or what people want to hear. That's your job. Your job isn't to be honest or to be a statesman or to do anything for the public good. It's to say the right things to make people, you know, want to vote for you or get all riled up and get in their mob mentality. Of course, if you do them, it doesn't matter. People don't care. They still love you. I mean, look at all the anti-war left from the Bush era. When Obama got in power, instead of, you know, hating on the government for killing brown people and torturing people and keeping Guantanamo open, they just say things like, well, you know, and it's time to focus on what we have here at home. And I just want to make sure that the government pays for my insurance. And that's what I care about now. And at least Obama's doing that kind of stuff.
Here's what I think. I think I want to get off this subject because we are doing what we do often on The Fiends, which is get dragged into the tyranny and the left-right paradigm and bitching about the government. When recently we did a podcast, we're at the end of it, we did that, and then for the last 20 minutes we talked about audio gear, and we ended up so happy by the end of it. So I want to steer this to other things, like bigger picture things of what's wrong with the world more historically, and not even just in politics. And I want to talk about radio. I want to talk about movies, especially Black Metal Satanica, which I highly recommend. And okay. it's from MVD Visual, the people who put out Guns and Weed and are putting out my new Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle series and all the other movies I've done. Black Metal Satanica. It's great. And I swear there's a guy in there that Toki is based on. Guy from Norton.
From Metalocalypse?
Yeah. I mean, nice. I'm literally serious. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. And you're right. I guess sometimes we just got to get this out of us first.
It's so out.
It can be sort of a story progression.
We took our liberty dump. Let's move on. So Black Metal Satanica.
All right.
It's another one of those ones about church burnings. And interesting, though, they actually, like, the other ones I've seen, the people are all, like, angry and scary and trying to, like, sound like, we want the world to think we're special because we're weird. And the guys in this one, they're all Norwegians and Swedes, and they're all, like, so soft-spoken and mellow, and they're like, well, we had to burn these churches because it was retribution for our ancestors being conquered by Christianity. The Vikings were a peaceful, peace-loving group of people who only went around marauding when they needed to, and then the Catholics came in and tried to force them to be Christian and forced snakes down their throats and burned their land. So for those ancestors of ours who were destroyed by the Catholic Church, we decide we must burn churches now, I thought, 2,000 years later, as retribution.
Wow. Isn't that horribly collectivist, though? I've always thought that, yeah, that retribution for what your ancestors did is, you can't blame the current people for the crimes of their father, or in this case, their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers.
Yeah, I guess it was 1,000 years ago, not 2,000 years ago. About 1,000 years ago, they came in, and maybe a little more than that. When did the church come in and conquer the Vikings?
Man, you'd have to ask Ben Stone that. I don't know. They conquered, I mean, let's see, the French conquered England in what, 1066? So I would imagine.
DJ would know, too. DJ would know. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So what made you love the movie so much then?
It's really well done. It's not trying to assert itself. It's really understated. It's also done in like cinematographic widescreen, which is a weird format for a digital documentary, but you can tell they're kind of cheating because the black bars at the top and the bottom, in the black bar at the bottom, they actually use some of that space to put lower thirds, like names of bands and stuff. And I'm like, that's not how you do that, but it's kind of surreal to watch. But it's
widescreen
really
does
well
not
done.
Work that way.
Yeah. It'd be kind of like, you know, if you went to a movie theater and there was like a little neon sign under the screen, it would be the same effect.
Yeah. Or one of those scrolling signs you see by businesses, like rotating with the red letters.
I like the ones that are just a single line, vertical line of LEDs. But if you're moving your head sideways past them, you see text in them that you can program in. You ever seen those?
Hold on. I had to kiss my wife.
They have them in bars. They have them in bars to like mess with people's heads, but they have advertising in them.
So what's trippy about them? They're a vertical line of text. And if
it's not like a normal LED billboard, which is a long rectangle of a matrix of LEDs, you know, an array of LEDs that spell stuff out and it scrolls from left to right or whatever, like they have on the side of buildings in New York with the stock ticker on it now.
Right.
But it's actually just like one vertical line of one of those. Like if you took the far left column, you know, it's just a line of like 50 LEDs that are all one color.
Okay.
And there's some way to program them. I mean, if you just look at them, they don't even look like they're blinking. But if you turn your head one way or the other past them, and especially if your eyes are a little fuzzed out, like not staring right at them, but past them or before them, there's sentences.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, that's
some
cool
kind of mind trick.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Rolling.
So, Nima.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, I saw a bunch of movies one day on some new cable channel I have that was like, it was an afternoon of movies that like all had one common theme. They didn't advertise it to this. I just noticed it. It was all like one man against some big force. It was JFK, Gattaca, and that Will Smith movie about iRobot. Yeah. One man against the world.
Now, I saw a one man against the world kind of movie, and it was, well, it was really a Mosin and a man against the world. Enemy at the Gates. You had mentioned wanting to talk about it on the cast, and I had
the
seen
Mosin
it.
Is the hero. The weapon, the rifle is the hero in that.
The
much.
Mosin is totally the hero. Yeah, and it's about this real sniper called Vasily Zatsayev. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But he was a real guy. I mean, I guess the movie's kind of, I mean, it's mostly fiction. I guess all this stuff is not confirmed, you know, that happened in the movie as far as the love story and him banging.
Well, no, the thing that's true, though, I believe, is that he was picked out by the Russians as a poster boy to bolster the troops and the citizens.
Yeah, that part is true.
Citizens, and subjects.
The other part that's true is the fact that he had this... His first shots of the Battle of Stalingrad, because the movie's about the Battle of Stalingrad, his first shots were amazing, and it so impressed everybody else that they decided to use him as propaganda and to promote him to sniper, and instead of giving him, you know, the normal general issue iron sight Mosin, they gave him the sniper Mosin with the PU scope on it. And in
what's
the movie,
PU? Huh? What's PU? PU? What's that, up?
That's what I said.
What is PU?
Oh, I don't know what it stands for. Do you?
No.
That's just what they call the scopes. I don't know why they call them that.
Probably. My Mosin doesn't have a scope. It's like, is not scope. It's Mosin.
It's Mosin. Yeah. Well, his first shots in both historically in the war and in the movie were with the iron sight Mosin. And in the movie, the way it works is like he's laying in a pile of dead bodies by a fountain. Some other guy is able to grab a gun, you know, a Mosin, and is pointing. And he's like, hey. Do you know how to shoot? And he looks at, I think it's Jude Law that plays the sniper. And Vasily, or Jude Law, is like, yeah, a little bit. And so he hands Vasily the sniper rifle. And he takes out 5 Germans that are just like, one of them is an officer who's like showering in a window. He shoots five guys, which I thought was great because, you know,
because there's five rounds in a Mosin.
Five rounds in a Mosin, yeah. So it's like, you know, most of the time in action movies, they got a handgun, they're shooting like 50 rounds out of it without reloading.
Yeah, not it wasn't so even one shot, one kill. It was five shots, five kill, which even for a sniper would be rare, but probably not at that distance. These were like at 100 yards or less. But he was taught as a kid in the movie. He was taught as a kid by his grandfather to hunt and taught him lots of like surveillance and hiding and, you know, putting snow in your mouth so that the enemy can't see your breath in the freeze.
How to actually be a hunter, you know, the psychological aspects and the strategic aspects of it rather than just being an excellent marksman.
Every good hunter is a sniper, which is like something that most governments are afraid of because hunting is kind of the last thing you can outlaw in gun ownership if you do it incrementally. You know, it's like you can say, well, handguns, they're only meant to murder people. But, you know, there's all these gun right groups that like mainly what their thing is about is the hunter, you know. Yeah. And most of the guns in America probably are hunting rifles.
Yeah, I would probably buy that. I don't know the actual statistic. I do know that his actual first shots, Vasily Zaitsev, his actual first shots, I think, were actually cooler than the first scene in the movie where he uses the Mosin. He used an iron sight Mosin from 800 yards away to shoot into a window of a building where there were three Germans and killed three Germans from 800 yards
away. I can't see 800 yards.
Yeah.
With my naked eye. I mean, I could barely see a house at 800 yards if it was, you know, different color than the land it's on and up on a hill and I had a clean line of sight.
Yeah,
I could barely see that. I mean, I could see it. I could tell it's a house, but I could barely make out a window on it.
Yeah. And not just a window, but somebody's body or head through a window at 800 yards. Three times, three kills. It just boggles my mind that you can do that with the Mosin. And that's another reason why this movie is so cool is because, in fact, I was sitting in bed watching it with the laptop on my lap, and I had my Mosin in my lap, too. Like, I was holding it and stroking it.
You know, it's really funny. The gun training guy that I was working with, I mean, he's a libertarian. He's not square. He is an expert with guns. I mean, he knows as much as anybody I've ever met and really knows his stuff and is really good at public speaking and, like, explaining it at the most basic level. But when I showed him that book I have, Armed in America, that shows people all around the world in their house with guns, and he was like, I kind of think this is a bad idea for gun ownership because it makes people kind of look weird. And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, people don't normally sit around with their guns, you know, out displayed like this, you know, like
I do.
And I said, I do. You know, not even displayed, but just like, you know, like people don't watch TV with a loaded rifle sitting on the TV table in front of their feet. And I'm like, I do.
You sure as hell do. I remember the first time I met you. You invited me over for, was it Buffalo Chili? I forget what. I was all like, yeah, we'll get together sometime. And you're like, come over now. My wife's making food. And I was like, okay. I won't have to buy dinner. Sounds great. And the first thing I walked in, there's like, I don't know how many, seven guns visible or something. And you were just like, come check out my guns. And you gave me the tour. Instead of the tour of your house, you gave me a tour of your weapons. And I was like, I was kind of hesitant at first, but I was like, okay, this is cool.
God told me to do that.
God did, yeah. It was divine intervention.
I don't think God tells people to do things if there is a God. But I think there's a God, but I don't think God tells people. I think God created the universe, but I don't think God knows my phone number or won't take my calls, which isn't that I'm not praying right. It's just like, you know, I think people imagine that they have interactions like that, but something told me to do that. Something told me to find you and seek you out and stalk you and teach you about guns and have you teach me about anarchism and create a force bigger than the both of us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that something was right, because look at the results.
I know. Yep. Look at the results. I'm sitting at home looking out the window crunching carrot sticks on the internet.
Amazing.
Well, you can't say the fiends haven't done their public service announcement. I mean, that's better than telling a kid, eat your vegetables or your dog's eye will fall out. You know, I'm just saying like, hey, I'm eating my vegetables. I'm showing, not telling.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And I think more than anything, I don't think it's a government thing. The government wants you to eat grains and sugar, not vegetables.
Well, they used to have this thing called the food pyramid when I was a kid, but I think they phased it out either in favor of like Monsanto pyramid or something. I don't know.
They've got like a my plategov.com or something where it shows you
myplate.gov. Even want your plate, man.
They do, man. It's like a pie chart, but it's like a plate, and they show you like the percentage of your items on your plate.
myplate.gov.
Yeah,
I didn't know about that. That's hilarious.
Well, now
man.
You know. Yeah. But they want to regulate that. They want to regulate what you eat, what you buy at the grocery store.
No. Stop at just laughing at the beast, and then we go on.
Just laughing at the beast. Okay.
They're not complaining about the beast today. We're just going to go, that is so square, and go back to talking about
ridicule,
movies.
Ridicule.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and then great stuff about movies and gear.
Gattaca. And Moses. Our friend that does DNA sequencing, that I'm going to have an interview with him on here pretty soon, Kevin.
Yeah.
Who sequenced the marijuana genome. Is that how you say it? Yeah. He is a genius. Did you know he's been like invited to the White House twice for his DNA work? I mean, how many people are you friends with that have been invited to the White House?
I don't know. I guess just him. But because he actually did a lot of work on the actual human genome, which if you remember from about a decade ago, that was like, or I don't know if that was that long ago, but that was like the huge project. Like, we can figure out everything that goes into human DNA, and they did, which is like an amazing feat of humanity.
I mean, I'm not impressed with the White House, but I'm impressed that I know someone who's, you know, considered such an expert in their field. That's an honor to most people.
Yeah.
You know, if I got invited to the White House, first of all, they wouldn't. Second of all, I'd be just shooting my mouth off. Like, Mr. President, no matter who it is, why do you blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I'd have my H2 running, which they'd probably take away because they think it's a weapon or something. But, you know, I'd want to interview the president and yell at him.
Yeah, exactly. I'd want to talk about what a tyrant he was. Anyway, or not go like the hockey player that refused to go.
Why did he refuse to go? War?
No, it was politics. I think, I don't know what his politics are, but he's some kind of libertarian. I don't know if he's a minarchist, anarchist, or what, but he was like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks, guys. I'm going to refuse to go. And it was a big political statement. All the comments on the article were like, I can't believe he's using this opportunity as a chance to talk about politics. It's just an invitation to the White House. It's tradition. It's not supposed to be political. But it's like, if you don't support the system, why would you take an honorific that was bestowed upon you by the system you don't support?
Well, and, you know, someone saying you shouldn't bring politics into this, but I would say any president inviting some great person to the White House ever is the president using it for politics.
Oh, completely. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's a political act, is inviting somebody to the head of state's house. I mean, because they get to choose who they invite, and so people try to get invited. It's overtly political.
So I talked to Kevin the other day. He's being asked to, like, give the commencement speech at his high school or college or something, and he's like, I'm trying to think of what to talk about. And I said, well, I just watched the movie Gattaca, you know, that, like, DNA horror movie.
I've never seen it. Is it worth
the view? Yeah, maybe. I told him he should just get drunk and quote Gattaca. It's a not-too-distant future, you know, dark, you know, tyrannical state kind of thing, where, like, every time you go anywhere, you're checked for your DNA to make sure who you are. And, like, when parents want to have kids, it's not quite Brave New World where the state has your kids for you, and it's actually optional, but everyone does this because they want to. You go to a lab, they take out, you know, they take your sperm, they take your wife's eggs and examine them and cull it down to, like, you know, four groupings that will produce the ultimate child. And they'll have, like, well, we have two male, you know, we have a male one, we have a female one, and we have twins. Which one do you want? You know, and it's like the kid that'll have the lowest chance of cancer, of sickle cell anemia, and the best chance of being an athlete and a genius and this and that. And then they put, you know, they fertilize them and put them back in the wife. That's how people have kids in this world.
That doesn't seem so bad, though, does it?
No. But it's interesting, too, because it kind of like they talk about, you know, like, insurance companies aren't allowed to discriminate on genetic basis, but they all do, which, you know, may not happen, whatever, who knows. But it's an interesting movie. I didn't really like it because there's no one to really like in it, you know. No matter how dark a movie is, there has to be someone likable. And the main character in this isn't likable. Actually, the person that's kind of amusing is the second main character, which is also played by Jude Law. He always kind of plays a creepy asshole, you know, or a, you know, violent guy or a killer or a soldier or something.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. it's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
I actually liked in the Mosin movie, Enemy at the Gates, I liked Ed Harris better, the Nazi rifleman that was shooting at him. He just was a, not because he was a Nazi, but I love Ed Harris, and he was kind of a better, like a more badass character in a way.
Oh yeah, he was, and he took some amazing shots. Again, it's fiction, so I don't know. The Wikipedia
like the
says they don't know if he actually
the string
exists.
When the guy drops his Mosin and he's hiding behind cover, and Ed is trying to shoot at him, and the guy can't go out and get his Mosin because he'll get shot, and so he like takes some thread off a sewing machine in this factory and like throws it on some scissors and hooks it on the gun and starts pulling his rifle towards him, and you know, from like 200 yards away or something, Ed Harris's character like shoots the thread.
Yeah, shoots the thread out. which you know, you just crap your pants, be like, oh my god. Yeah. This guy can shoot a string. Yikes. Yeah. And the other really amazing shot I thought was they do this thing where they sort of play, they take turns on who's going to go first whenever they're jumping into an open space, because you know, in Stalingrad, they're going from building to building, and the first person is less likely to get shot, I suppose, is the thinking behind it, because you know, one person's going to go, and then the gunner is going to see that people are running through that building, so the gunner is going to shoot the second, third, etc. But Ed Harris's character is such a great shot that Vasily, you know, his partner sniper, it's his turn to go first. So his partner, they both jump at like the same time from building to building, and the guy in front of him just gets his brains blowed out by Ed Harris. Just like, you didn't even know that was coming, and a human is jumping from one building to the other, and you can hit him in the head with your rifle, which I don't know what rifle did the German have. I don't think they explained it.
A Mauser?
Yeah, I guess that's what they rocked back
then. That
was
the German Mosin, the German Rifle of Empire.
Rifle of Empire. Explain
my friend
that.
Likes to call. That's what my friend calls the, you know, Mausers, Mosins, Enfields is the British one.
Mm-hmm.
But Rifle of Empire was, you know, like World War II era, or, you know, really from like 1900 to 2000, they were kind of in use, or 1900 to like 1960 or 70 until the AK came out and the AR.
I guess the AR is now the Rifle of Empire.
Yeah, I mean, the Rifle of Empire for America would have been the M1 Grand. Oh, this weekend I shot an M1A. They are such sweet rifles, man. It's like an M1 Grand, pretty much, that shoots .308 instead of .30-06.
Wow.
They're like a foul made out of wood.
Yeah,
if you can picture that.
Semi-automatic.
Yeah, beautiful. But you know, 10-round or 20-round mag. But
can you modify them to put like a banana clip on them with 30 rounds?
I don't think you'd need to. You could probably just get an aftermarket 30-round. I mean, it's a detachable mag.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, like an AK or an AR or a you know, Mos FAL.
Right. Right.
It's not internal like with a Rifle of Empire. Yeah, the old Rifle of Empire. That was my friend's funny term for like, you know, the great superpowers of the 20th century all had these bolt action, you know, 5 or 6 shot, 30 caliber, you know, guns that could kill a guy at a half mile in the right hands. Rifle of Empire, Mosin, Enfield, I guess I'd say Garand, and Mauser.
Okay,
there's some other ones. I mean, I think India had one, and I don't know, different countries had them too, but a lot of people just copied the Mosin. I mean, Mosins were made in several different countries. Finland made them, lot of the Soviet satellite states made them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the Finnish ones are like extra expensive.
Yeah, because they're special.
They're special.
Yeah. Well, the.
Because they're death metal.
There was a Finnish sniper, I can't remember his name, but who I think had like the highest confirmed kill count at that point in history. He was a little short guy that, you know, did snow shooting, you know, like off of skis. I mean, it's kind of James Bondian, you know?
Yeah, yeah. How do you feel about snipers and sniping with regard to the non-aggression principle?
All's fair in love and war? I don't know, man. Well, whoever snipers shoot at, I mean, are we talking about politicians or shooting at other soldiers in the war? I mean, you know, anybody that a soldier is shooting at, that a sniper soldier is shooting at in war, well, not all the time, but a lot of time it's people who are trying to shoot at him. I guess that's a preemptive strike, not, you know, waiting for the initiation of aggression. But the aggression is ongoing in war on both sides. And then, you know, snipers often take out politicians or whatever, you know, historically, you know, people. I mean, the United States tried to kill Castro forever, and Castro's still alive. But
yeah. Well, I guess that's what kind of makes it have some cognitive dissonance in my head is, yeah, a lot of times snipers are shooting people from distances where the people don't even know they're there, and therefore can't necessarily be aggressing on them. And I guess one of the problems with war is it's the collectivization of aggression. So you can look at this group of people and say, this group of people is attacking me. So I guess you have to have some sort of collectivism in your mind.
Well, they often go after the leaders who are, you know, initiating mass aggression, too.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess if you are shooting officers that are ordering and controlling the whole thing. But there's other types of sniping that I think blatantly disregards non-aggression. And I guess there was an article I'd read recently about American snipers in the Iraq War. And a lot of them had standing orders. I think they might have been unofficial, like not written down orders. But they were told to shoot any fighting age male that they saw. Or at least that was
and another thing in Iraq, another thing was like, I mean, if you look at that collateral murder thing video, you know, they shot an unarmed non-combatant who was a cameraman who was carrying a camera or a tripod. And from a distance in the helicopter, they thought he was carrying an AK-47. And that was their reason to fire on him. But the thing is, carrying an AK-47 is legal in Iraq. Any adult head of household can own one. And, you know, if he's in a bad neighborhood, well, they're all bad neighborhoods when America's there. But, you know, if he's in a dangerous situation and he's, you know, driving his wife to work or something, or just going to work himself, or she wouldn't work. But, you know, if he's anyway, it's legal for an adult male to have a gun on his person in Iraq. So the Americans are coming in and saying, well, we're shooting people who are not violating the law of their country, you know?
Yeah. We're just shooting people to shoot people. Yeah. And, you know, that comes from a lot of the fact that I don't think anybody really could give a good straight answer on why we're there, other than some vague thing of, you know, preventing terrorism or preventing a safe haven or whatever the case was. But, I mean, they defeated the state, you know, Saddam Hussein's forces in a matter of weeks, if that. You know, sacking Baghdad pretty much a few days after boots were on the ground. So then what do you do at that point? You just stay there and kill people who aren't involved in necessarily, or that you don't know what they're involved in, just shooting them randomly. And that kind of thing, that kind of sniping, I don't think people should go home and write books about and be called heroes.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, you know, when you said, what do you think of snipers? Like, it was a very open question, and I didn't know what you meant. And I was going to talk about how, like, you know, I've read some kind of, like, patriot books written in the past 10 or 20 years that say, like, you know, we need to be a nation of riflemen, because only being a nation of riflemen is going to keep the government at bay. And I kind of believe that. Like, I'm not a rifleman. I'm not good enough shot to be one yet. And I think I'm too lazy. I was going to say too old, but too lazy to become one. And I also don't buy that line, but I read a lot of books like that and kind of like agreed, like, well, that's one solution that there could be, until I listened to Ben Quaker, and he just like morally blew that out of the water, and like, you know, the possibility of it is blown out of the water from what he explains to me, and I believe. And with drones, it's a moot point. But anyway, so that was like a thought that was out there for a long time in what I guess is called the U.S. Patriot Movement, would be like, you know, when they cross this line in the sand, we're going to snipe them, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, even mentioning that you've read books like that, even if you say, I'm saying I disagree with it, but even like, I've read books like that, saying that, a lot of people would be like, oh, you're a terrorist and need to be watched because I'm saying I've read books like that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you walk up to most Americans and say, you know, my son just got promoted to sniper in the U.S. military, they'd be like, tell him thank you for my service when you talk, you know, you know, they'd be like, thank you for his service.
Their,
you know,
underpants would get a little bit moist.
Yeah. Whereas if with the previous thing, their underpants would get moist because they'd peed themselves, because you're talking about that kind of work.
They peed a little. Yeah.
Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast.
Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night. The Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there.
Rolling.
So, Nima, you feisty and ready for further abuse here?
Always, man. Abuse me all you want.
I will never be invited to the White House for a number of reasons, but if I were, I would go, and I'd get up in his face and in his grill and ask him a lot of questions.
Yeah, I guess I've always had that fantasy, too. Like, I have a fantasy of me just getting in front of the president and just going off on him, but I don't think it would do any good.
Yeah, first of all, the fact that you just said that on the internet not only means you'll never go to the White House, but, you know, they're going to probably drone you for saying that, but... Yeah, I don't mean I'd punch him. I mean I'd get in his face and ask him questions, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I meant too. But at the same time, it's not a smart idea to piss off somebody who can eviscerate you with a word. You know, all he has to do is say drone Nima and poof.
I would, man. I would. I've lived a good long life. And, you know, I think we're reaching the critical mass here where if anything happens to either of us, I think we've got enough fans that it's going to hurt the state, not help the state, because the fiends are going to martyr us.
Well, Ben Stone had a nice takedown of
I know,
of martyrdom
I know,
fantasy.
I heard that too. It's a fantasy, and I don't mean it. I will say that I think that people can get to a point where it's counterproductive for the state to hassle them.
Yeah.
But I do agree with Ben of, like, you know, you're not going to do some grand gesture and go to jail and, you know, end up changing the world because of it.
Or if you do, there's nothing to say that you didn't change the world in the wrong direction. And I guess that's the point he makes, is that, you know, Jesus's followers throughout history,
they co-opt the message. When there's martyrs, the message gets co-opted.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus's message was not build tons of buildings and give all your money to these charismatic humans. And, you know, Martin Luther King's message was not use the government guns to make things worse. Or maybe it was. I don't know.
Some people posit that he economically was a socialist, but...
he was a socialist, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean... But he was so anti-war, and he was, I guess, preaching equality. He was. I don't think he would have been a fan of things like affirmative action. He wouldn't have been a fan of using violence to right things. I mean, his whole estilo was nonviolence. It wasn't...
I liked him. I liked his talk, man. He talked a good talk, and, you know... Did good stuff, sort of.
Well, yeah, and his unjust law quote, I mean, that's timeless, and we used it in the Guns and Weed movie. You know, an unjust law is no law at all.
Speaking of unjust laws, I want to pimp the post on Freedom Fiends. It's one or two down from this one. It's called Make Your Own Liberty Radio Station for $250. It's by my friend Cash Newman, and it's a post on how to start an FM radio station for $250 that would be legal in some countries, wouldn't really be legal in America, but, you know, we'd never recommend that you break any laws, even nanny laws. The social contract depends on the fact that you don't, because if you do break laws, the world will degenerate into anarchy.
Yay, we should all break laws.
He says that in the post. He gives step-by-step directions and tells you exactly what you need and how to do it and where to find it. But he says, or obey nanny laws or the world will degenerate into anarchy. And the link of the word anarchy goes to the Wikipedia article on anarcho-capitalism.
Nice. Very clever and well done.
And the other thing I want to say is people should start putting Freedom Fiends up on TV in their town by going to their TV station and telling them that you want to do a public access show. It's free. They can't tell you not to as long as you don't swear. If someone wants to do that, I will edit some casts for them to take out the ads and any cussing and any URLs because you can't have those in. Let me know. If someone can get a public access radio show somewhere, I will produce the single frame video with properly edited audio for you to do that.
I'd like to do that once I'm back in Austin, because I know people actually do watch Austin's public access, because there usually is weird people saying cool things on it, or at least interesting things. I mean, like I said, Alex Jones, my first memory of him was watching him on public access when I lived in Austin.
Yeah.
So, fiends.
You know, there's also another idea that's presented in that article by Cash Newman, our friend, about making your own Liberty radio station. It's something he came up with. He calls the Sisterhood of the Traveling Transmitter.
Okay.
Which is basically the idea that, you know, four or five people could chip in and spend $50 each and get the equipment to do this. And one person does it for 2 or 3 months and then sends it to the person in the next town to do for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. I think that's a really great idea, too.
Which would, you know, cut down on the price and cut down on the possibility of getting in trouble if for some reason you break some law. Although you shouldn't break laws, even nanny laws, because the social contract depends on it. And if you break any nanny laws, society will degenerate into anarchy.
Red libertarian paradise. But yeah, and the other thing about it too that I see as a benefit for that is it seems like one of the reasons to do the radio thing is to get new listeners, you know, to not preach to the choir, which I think preaching to the choir is great and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but at the same time you got to be building the movement, you know, missionary work, proselytizing, and radio can do that because, yeah, people just drive in their car, they flip them through the stations, they hit the scan button, bam, Freedom Fiends. But if they get hooked, you know, it's easy to find without that. You know, they start listening to it on the radio, and then obviously they're like, well, you know, I want to listen to this on my own time, so I'm going to download the podcast, I'm going to subscribe. You send the transmitter to a new city, same thing happens again.
Nima, do you have a Nima, do you have a little bit of flange on your audio somehow?
Flange,
tiny bit. Yeah, it's weird. I think it's something built into Skype now because whenever I've been talking to people on, did you take your headset off?
Hello? I kicked the headphone jack out of my computer because I was looking for the flange button.
You were looking for the flanginator 3000 that the government installed while you were sleeping.
Yes.
No, maybe it is an effect of like wiretapping through Skype or something, because I've been hearing every time I do Skype lately on any of my computers, there's a tiny bit of what sounds like flange. It sounds good, actually. It actually makes the Skype sound a little sweeter somehow.
Maybe it's audio sweetening on Skype's part too, in order for that benefit
to sound better. Yeah, maybe. But are you getting it from me on your end?
No, you actually sound cleaner than usual from your end. I don't know why that is.
Because I got up really early this morning and I'm all full of clean living.
You sure are.
Because we're not cussing. I don't drink or smoke. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. We're not cussing. And I got up early, you know. So I'm into clean living. You got to be when you hit 48 or you're going to, you know, you're going to die old and sad with mud butt at 50, you know?
Mud butt. I'm actually drinking right now, so I'm not 50 yet. I guess I'll stop drinking when I'm older. Not.
It's a young man's game. I love it. So the wife goes to work, and then you pop open a cold
exactly.
one?
Exactly. It's my day off, man. Leave me alone. Now, that's my usual tradition. I have some kind of caffeine at the beginning of cast and some kind of alcohol in the middle of the cast.
Poor man's speedball.
Well, I guess. They'd be at the same time to be a speedball, though, right?
Yeah. A poor man's slow speedball.
Yeah. See, when I was in college, my speedball was snorting Adderall and smoking a blunt, and that was my speedball. Then I'd go study.
I never did a speedball, man. I never liked stimulants. I only liked the heroin.
Mm.
Speedball is mixing, like, coke and heroin and shooting it, which can kill you for a number of reasons. One is because it makes your heart try to fight to go slow and fast at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be incredible. So kids, go out and do it. No, I'm kidding. Do libertarians believe in legalizing selling heroin to school kids from vending machines, Nima?
Only if it's a privately owned vending machine.
Yes.
We've talked about that before. Speaking about things we've talked about before and drugs, there was a Jankum reference on American Dad that I thought was hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there was.
What'd they say?
Well, it's an... Because, you know, his stuff, Seth MacFarlane's stuff, gets kind of liberal political sometimes. And so the episode was, you can't live on minimum wage. To prove it, Stan's like, yes, you can. And so he decides to live on $936 for a month. And he obviously becomes a bum.
Which is based on an episode of that show, 30 Days, you know, with the guy who made Super Size Me. He had a TV show where people would vastly change their life. Like, they'd put, like, some redneck living with a Muslim for a month. Mm-hmm. There was one where the pilot, and his wife tried to live on minimum wage for a month.
Okay, yeah, I seem to remember that. But, okay, so maybe this was a takeoff on that same concept. But Stan ends up poor and broke and lying in an alley, and a very interesting bum comes up to him, and he's like, hey, buddy, would you like to try some of my Jankum? And Stan's like, sure, what's in it? And he's like, my own bodily waste.
Wow, I missed that one. Is it like last week's?
It's from a couple weeks ago, I think. And so,
I think that interesting bum comes up before. I recognize the voice because there's one where Stan gets addicted to crack. And I think that same bum is the guy that sells him his first hit.
It might be. But yeah, they all huff Jankum, and then Stan tries to do a house raid and break into his own house to steal his own stuff to support his habits or to keep from being a bum and
to buy more Jankum. Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know anybody else had used the Jankum meme other than us, but I guess it's
awesome.
Well enough known for American Dad.
Well, today you can use anything that's like so random that, you know, kids will just Google it.
Yeah, exactly. Jankum.
I wonder what number we come up when you Google Jankum if we're on the first page or not. Because we've talked about it. It's been in the show notes several times.
Yeah.
And I think it was the title of an episode, which brings you higher in
Jankum. Let me look. How do you spell it?
J-E-N-K-E-M.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, Google asked me, did I mean Jankum when I spelled it wrong?
How do you spell it?
I spelled it J-E-N-K-U-M.
So search the word fiends on that page and see if we come up.
Say no to Jankum YouTube. Fox reports on Jankum. Let's see. We're not on the first page.
So speaking of radio, while you're looking for that, Clear Channel, who own like most of the radio stations in the country, and they're the reason you can't get a low bandwidth broadcast FM license anymore. It used to be like, you know, churches or community groups, or I'm sure the Fiends could have done it back then. You used to be able to get for like $100, you could get a license to broadcast FM up to 100 watts, which is, you know, covers a county, not just a city. Mm-hmm. But Clear Channel bought up all the space or all the licensing to where they don't have that anymore. So people have to go pirate if they want to do it or broadcast at 100 milliwatts, which, you know, as Dale Gribble says, makes you the most powerful station in the tri-yard area.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiend show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned. But yeah, it turns out that Clear Channel uses fake callers, like actors calling in on their call-in shows, like Hannity, Rush, Beck, etc.
Yep. I've read about that before.
And they admit it.
I thought they had admitted it when I was reading about it. It was mostly for like morning shows, like, you know, the Zoo Crew today kind of stuff. I didn't know they did it for Hannity.
No, they do it for all of them. And if you think it's just the right wingers that want to quash community radio, NPR is also adamantly against having opening it back up for low power community 100 watt licensing.
Yeah, yeah. Which it just goes to show you that when you have a system where you have a licensor like the FCC, the main powers, the status quo, are always going to keep competitors out. That becomes their goal, and they have a tool for it. It's impossible to prevent it. You can't say, oh, well, our FCC, you know, our bureaucrats and our regulators, they're good-spirited, and they're only going to do things in the public spirit. But it just doesn't work that way. They're going to do the things that – they're going to get corrupted. It's impossible. Power corrupts, and if you give somebody the power to say who can have a radio station and who can't, that power is going to be used for evil.
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 Oh, hey, I looked for my echo on my mixer, but I'm not using my mixer. I wanted to go evil.
Now, I think you have to use the pitch shift and the reverb to sound like Satan.
Yeah. On the interview today, Ernest Hancock was kind of taken aback when I started using my effects, because he does that all the time, and I could hear how cheesy it is now and how I should stop doing it. He started doing it lately. He started using echo, not even reverb, but echo on the beginning, like first 5 or 10 seconds of coming out of a commercial sometimes. You know, I guess he's got a new big mixing board, and he's like, oh, I've got toys. And I'm like, I was like, I've got those toys too, Ernest. And he was like, hey, none of that.
Yeah, only me.
Only me.
Yeah. This is my show. Well, it's his show. Funny. It's his private property, right?
It is his show. It's his private property. It's a libertarian right to do that.
Yeah. And I guess effects are, you know, if you use them well and sparingly, they can be awesome. But
and if you use them like me in earnest, it sounds like the Morning Zoo Crew.
The Morning Zoo Crew. Yeah. Libertarian prank calls. We should do that. Libertarian prank calls.
You'd probably get arrested for something under the Patriot Act, you know, not just like the crime of making a crank call, but like the crime of like promoting
tying up government resources.
Yes. Yeah. Because you had to keep your line open because the government might have needed to robocall you and tell you that the wind is blowing or something.
Speaking of things like that, because what came to my mind was calling the cops and saying, hey, somebody stole my weed. I remember
it happened once, and it's a lot of times it's in those like Darwin Awards cop things, you know, of like people who rob the bank and, you know, write the note that says give me all your money on the back of one of their own deposit slips or something with their name and address on it. Yeah, there's one of like someone who called the cops because someone ripped off their weed, and I'm thinking like, okay, you're calling that person an idiot, and I wouldn't do it, but
shouldn't that be what cops are for, to protect your property?
That's what cops should be for, man, to protect your weed when it's stolen.
Fine, not what they should be for, but that's what they say. I mean, they're supposed to protect your property. That's the meme. That's the social contract. We're here to protect you from getting your property stolen and getting murdered. My weed is my property just as much as my car.
You know what I'm humming?
No.
I'm humming Rocket by Herbie Hancock.
Oh, yeah. With the Fairlight.
Which is interesting. It was one of the first hits with a sampler. The sampler was the Fairlight, the CMI Fairlight, which cost $25,000 in 1983, which is like $150,000 in today's dollars, and like, you know, took up half a room.
Wow.
You know, it was like a computer with a keyboard with like a giant rack mount box, and you programmed it with a light pen on the computer screen.
Wow.
And I mean, you probably have a Fairlight VST plugin in your little keyboard.
I do.
Now,
it's one of the presets in Thor on Reason. The soft synth called Thor has a Thor. Fairlight. I think all the soft synth have some type of Fairlight in Reason.
Yep. But that song was a huge hit when it came out. I'm not going to put it in because we've agreed not to put anyone else's music in, so I just hummed it. But you know the song Rocket. It was like really weird, like techno instrumental, and it was a hit. It was like a number one hit. And the video for it is one of the first rock videos had like, it was all like mannequins playing keyboards, and it was really spooky looking. It was like robot hand mannequins.
What's so funny, because that sound cost him $25,000, but when you hear it these days, you're like, man, that synth sound sounds cheap.
That's cheesy.
Yeah, it's cheap
sounding.
I know. Sounds like he's playing it on his cell phone or something.
Yep. But it was I had a small world moment the other day when I was looking stuff up about that song. I didn't know this, but Bill Laswell, who produced the Bomb record, my band Bomb's record, Hate Fed Love, he plays bass guitar on that song.
Nice. It didn't sound like a bass guitar to me when I was listening to the bass.
I knew you'd say that. I know. Well, the bass guitar is not the thing that's going, bomb, bomb.
Well, I know that that's like an 808, a cheesy, probably right. Before 808, no, like
the
a
bass,
606.
The bass guitar in that song is like Philly style funk. You know, it's like instead of the slap style funk, it's like playing with two fingers in it, but it's all over the place and kind of muted. It's like, you know, the music's going do 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 do, but the bass is going do 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 do
do. Yeah, it's EQ'd funny though. It's not real heavy on the low end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Bill Laswell plays on that. He's everywhere, man. He's friggin' everywhere.
Frickin' everywhere.
Yeah. Except where he should have been, which was making my record sound better. Really, when we were in the studio recording that, I mean, he did some producing. Basically, he let his engineers do most of it, and like, you know, he'd be in the other room talking to you know, Ornette Coleman on the phone most of the time, and then he'd come in and like go, yeah, sounds good, or no, yeah, try this instead, and then he'd go out of the room for 20 minutes and then come back for 2 minutes. And it was in his studio with his guys, and he put some input on it, but he didn't really do much producing.
I kind of like a producer like that, though, because I feel like when I'm recording something, I do everything myself. The only thing I really feel like I'm missing is somebody saying, hey, that's just not working. Why don't you try this? Yeah, I feel like
Well, but I think that's the worst sounding Bomb record. I mean, we spent he charged us $35,000 in like 3 points on the record sales, and it doesn't sound as good as the record Happy All the Time, the 12-inch single or the 12-inch EP that Doug, our guitar player, produced, that, you know, Doug didn't charge us anything. The studio time for 2 days was about $1,000 plus $1,000 for tape, so that record cost $2,000 to record, and it sounds way punchier and way better, I think, than the Laswell
record.
Well,
I feel like when you produce, or you have somebody in your band or that works with you all the time that produces, you know what to do. You know how to EQ your voice to sound good. You know how to EQ your guitar or bass playing to sound good, because you're the one who makes the sounds all the time. So you know where it's lacking, where it needs more punch, where it needs the EQ, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I've also said, too, that Laswell told us he only did that record for money. He said, I'm a music addict, and every once in a while I record someone else's record to finance my music habit of, like, making his own weird world beat stuff, you know? So he didn't care about it.
It was a pop boiler.
And an interesting thing was, there was another guy that, Nicky Scopolitis, which I think sounds like a skin disease. I'm sorry, Mr. Fidati, you have Scopolitis. But Nicky Scopolitis, this guitar player who's kind of his Laswell's in-house session guitar rock dude, was working on his solo record in the same studio. So he would come in the afternoon and like lurk playing his guitar through no amp, just plinking on it in the waiting room, like lurking. And then as soon as we were done for the day, like he'd run in to work on his solo record with the same engineer and everything. And it kind of felt sometimes like the engineer would be like, okay, that's it for the day. And we're like, huh, what? And then Nicky Scopolitis would slither in.
Scopolitis. You got to watch for that Scopolitis, man. It's dirty.
That's why the Bomb record didn't sound very good. It got infected with Scopolitis. The session was infected. All right, let's save this file.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material. Hosted in the Czech Republic, freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.
I'm crunching. Oh, rolling.
Rolling. I wasn't rolling yet. Now I'm rolling.
I'm crunching some bell peppers.
Careful. Did you wash them? You might get scopolitis.
I'm sorry. It's terminal. Your child has scopolitis.
Speaking of that, and mixing and stuff, there's a guy on What is the website?
Fiverr.com.
Is that a website where people do things for $5?
Yeah, it's an incredibly popular website. And, you know, some things they do like cost more than $5, so they'll have you buy two jobs if it's $10 or three jobs if it's $15. But yeah.
Okay.
There's a guy who will mix your record for $5
a
song.
Not a record, a song. Oh, yeah, $5 a song. Yeah. Which is awesome. Yeah. And can only happen on the internet, because if you try to do it in real life, you'd probably be breaking some kind of minimum wage law or something.
Well, when we had the Bomb record mixed, we didn't like Laswell's mix, so we took it to the was it the Record Plant in New York City or Electric Ladyland? I forget, but we went to some big studio. You know, we recorded in Brooklyn, which was kind of neat, and then we went over to Manhattan to mix it. And I actually went back to San Francisco because I was sick of the band and the whole process and the major label, and I could score heroin easier in San Francisco. So I went home and let the band. I was like, "Here, you take this mess, you clean it up, and let them mix it." And they mixed it, and the guy charged $5,000 per song to mix the record on top of the $35,000 we'd paid.
So, of course, back then you needed a lot more equipment to mix songs.
But I'll bet this guy sounds better on his mixes for $5 a song than that guy charged for $5,000.
You know what? I might try one song.
I think you should. Yeah.
I mean, I really like to mix my own songs, but it gets tiring. And so maybe I'll let him do the work on one of these and see how it sounds.
What, do you upload the files to him or send him a data CD?
I'm not sure. I would imagine you would upload WAV files of, I would hope, the different tracks.
I would charge more than charge someone more than $5 to sit and download that amount of data.
Yeah, and that's what boggled my mind about this is, you know, it's so much work just to upload everything and download everything. If you're uploading a WAV file for a whole song for each different instrument, that's going to take a lot of work.
Is he in India? No, he looked American. He's a black kid. Looked hip-hop. Was he American?
I don't know. It doesn't say. He's called Wrong Tone Tony. So I don't know. Does it have a picture of him?
Actually, that was kind of nationalistic of me to say he looked American. He was a black kid into hip-hop. No, because he's into hip-hop.
Okay.
There's killer hip-hop from all over the world, man. Yeah. Some of it made by black people. So yeah. I sit corrected. I withdraw. From Crevice. I
was withdraw from Crevice.
In my first novel, I had a hooker. I named her Crevice.
Yeah. So, there was a hooker, so you could fall into Crevice.
Yeah, she was a using buddy of Cash Newman. I mean, of the protagonist of that particular novel.
Yes, of course.
It's kind of based on me. The novel's kind of based on my life, exaggerated, where, you know, I die instead of get clean. But it's pretty good. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women, and you can download it free on michaelwdean.com. Or you can buy the paperback used on Amazon. I don't get any money because it's all out of print, but there are used copies around.
Yeah. So go get it, worms.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that all of the copies of it that are out there, there's a hit of LSD dropped somewhere on one of the pages. So if you
eat the whole book after you read it. Eat it. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
It would be funny if somebody ate the book and then sued you. See, that's what's going to happen now. The NSA is listening to this, so they're going to have somebody eat the book, and then they're going to sue you. That's how they're going to get you.
Well, actually, the reason I took it back was an afterthought that was kind of like that. I kind of like the idea of someone trying to eat the book, but or at least selling it to have people try to figure out where the acid is. But I never put acid on any product I gave out or
you
sold.
You took it all yourself.
You know, yeah, but, you know, the DEA could be listening. They could go buy a used copy of that book on Amazon, put a drop of LSD somewhere on one of the pages, and then arrest me because I said that. So I take it back. I was just kidding, man. Go arrest Cash Newman. He's writing books on how to start radio stations anyways.
Oh, man. I don't even know where we go from there.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, freedom and such. Oh, and gear. Yeah, we talked about talking about gear. Should we talk about gear?
Let's talk about the rapper from Iran who's facing death threats and a bounty over his song.
Ah, yes, of course. Horrible, horrible story. Now, the guy isn't in Iran. He's Iranian descent, and he lives in Germany, I think. And I guess he had a song on his record where he was making fun of the religious establishment in Iran, which in Iran, the religious establishment and the state are pretty much the same. So, and it's illegal, apparently, to be, I guess, what they call an apostate, which is somebody who disavows Islam. punishable by death according to the state. So there are groups in Iran, or at least one group, that is calling for his death. The thing is, I don't think it's a state group, and it's really funny because in the article they quote the person from the group that's offering the bounty, and he's like, you know, this thing is going to be taken care of through the appropriate channels. Don't worry. Like, it's just a routine thing. Like, this is trying to get somebody for a traffic stop, and they're going to make sure that the law is followed.
So they're basically saying, you vigilantes, you don't need to go bother trying to kill him. We will arrest him and throw him in a dark cell somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to take care of getting this dissident.
Wow.
Which is just horrible. And I guess one of the things that I think of when I think of the Iranian Revolution and revolution, and you know, people talk about, you know, well, what do we do for liberty? And people talk about revolution sometimes. And it's like, you know, the people protesting before the Iranian Revolution, they didn't imagine this. They didn't want a government theocracy. They didn't want tyranny. They didn't want more tyranny. They wanted a free society. But when they overthrew the government, somebody came in, filled the power vacuum. It was the Ayatollah Khomeini. And this is what you end up getting. So,
that's yet another reason I will never support that, like, American patriot sniper revolution idea, is because if that could happen, and, you know, if the morality of it is put aside,
we'd end up with Rick Santorum being the dictator.
We'd end up with Rick Santorum, man. I mean, I'm not saying all the people that are like that, but I'm saying I think that's the government that would come in to fill the vacuum. I really do. If the, you know...
Yeah.
If the Constitution Party were,
when there's a vacuum like that, the masses get scared, and the masses want somebody who's going to alleviate their fears, and usually that's a politician that's going to come in.
Yeah, if it was a bunch of, you know, middle-aged white guys with rifles, they would probably lean towards, well, we don't want no immigrants in our new America, and we don't want no drugs in our new America.
Yeah.
And you'd end up with Rick Santorum, and he would ban free speech.
Yep. He banned free speech and sex that wasn't meant for procreation. You have cameras in your bedroom watching you bone, and he'd probably sit there and jack it while he was watching it too.
So he's got three kids. Does that mean he's had sex three times in his life?
He would probably argue that you know, you had to try. I wasn't a perfect shot, so I had to try a few more times in order to get those three kids.
Yeah.
But I was trying every single time for a kid.
I like this. There's a chimpanzee in a Rio de Janeiro zoo named Macaco Tio. That's the chimpanzee's name, or what the people have called him. It's probably not his name among the chimpanzees, but a newspaper...
Is that monkey's uncle? Like, I'll be monkey's uncle.
Oh, it probably is. A newspaper in Rio de Janeiro in 1988 ran this monkey for mayor, and he got 9.5% of the votes.
Nice. I would much.
It was. Oh, did I mention that it's a monkey that liked to throw poo at people?
Much less harmful than a normal
at visitors.
I would have voted for him.
He had a habit of throwing excrement at visitors, and he'd done it to several politicians who'd gone there grandstanding.
Ah.
You know, I will help the zoo and blah blah blah.
Beautiful. Sounds like the perfect candidate.
If I ever got invited to go to the White House, I'd want to send this monkey in my stead.
So that you could watch the video of Obama getting the crap thrown at him?
Yeah. Now, let's see.
It's almost as satisfying as watching it'd probably be more satisfying than watching the YouTube of the guy throwing his shoes at Bush in Iraq.
Yeah. I really like in that thing that Cash Newman made about doing your own radio, there's this really ugly but useful infographic on how to set it up from the microphone end of the chain to the transmitter to the antenna and everything in between. And it goes from left to right. And at the end, it says antenna goes on roof. And the picture he used is the White House. It's like it's an antenna on top of the.
Oh, nice.
So if Obama wants to run a pirate FM radio station and play the fiends, he should go look at that infographic, although I'm sure men are already on it for him.
Doesn't he have like a whitehouse.gov feedback thing? We should just send emails with Freedom Fiends episodes attached to it.
No.
No.
And, you know, that'd be like sending Coles to Newcastle. The government already has several computers in different cities where bureaucrat spy goons have a folder with your and my name on it, and one for the fiends and one for guns and weed. You know, and that's good, because one of the things I said about 15 years when I first got on the internet, before most people even had personal computers, I came up with this line that rings true today as much as then is, he who dies with his art on the most hard drives wins.
yeah. I'm worried.
So if there are Fed goons with folders full of Fiends MP3s, that's our art on more hard drives.
Yep. Amen. Worms.
They're going, okay, release the drones. He said it. He wants to die with our art on his hard drives.
Speaking of drones, didn't Judge Napolitano recently have a nice little saying about drones in people's backyards?
Yeah. You know, at worst, if that Patriot Revolution happened, Santorum would be president. But if they were smart, Judge Napolitano would be president.
But they're not smart.
Not all of them. Yeah, some of them are.
Yeah, I guess he said there would be the first person to shoot one of these backyard drones down will be an American hero, which I don't think it's true that I think he'd be an American villain, because who controls the media? And the media would not take too kindly to him. They'd be like, he shot it.
Well, he stole that idea from us, because about 2 months ago, we had an episode called Don't Drone Me, Bro. And the picture was a graphic someone had sent, a fiend had sent us, that was a drone in the crosshairs of a rifle scope.
That's true. So the thing is, while when he said it, I felt very, I guess, vindicated in a way, because I fantasize about that sometimes. Like when I read the thing about, you know, there could be drones, small drones, you know, flying over your city in your backyard, I was like, I'm going to shoot that. I'm going to use my Mossberg 500, but it's probably not the best idea.
Drones fly at like 24,000 feet.
Well, the drones he was talking about are smaller than that. He wasn't talking about predator drones.
Well, even so, I don't fantasize about things like that. That would be horrible. You must obey the laws and respect what the government's doing, or society will degenerate into anarchy.
Yes, the anarchy. I forgot. I'm so scared of the anarchy.
If there was a way to link,
I'm so much more scared of nobody controlling me than I am of having somebody control me.
I would link that word anarchy to the Wikipedia page on anarcho-capitalism. Anarcho. I can't say it. I just im it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, today Ernest asked us, so are you guys going to Porkfest? And was like arguing of why we need to go to Porkfest, and we both said no. And then I said, I don't need to go to Porkfest. I am Porkfest.
I didn't hear that. You are Porkfest. Yeah.
They would probably take exception to that, because,
I wouldn't mind going.
Maybe not.
I mean, especially, I guess there is some
I'd
of
go
that
if
aspect
it were up the street.
That he said of, you know, it, this is kind of what we preach about. You know, this is the envisionment of it. It's so he made it sound like it's kind of like LibPair for a week.
Go, go, freedom fiends.
Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, saving the universe. Freedom fiends, doing the things that I've
taking the world from the state, fighting the forces of hate.
Freedom fiends, helping the helpless. Freedom fiends, kicking the hornet's nest. Freedom fiends, doing the things that I've
taken. Keeping the tasers away. You'll hear the truth today. Yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block. For the fiends on the block, ain't never gonna stop in the glass go blow.
Which might be nice. I mean, that
here's what they should do. They should have a thing at Porkfest where you can inexpensively rent a good gun and holster for the week. Mm-hmm. I might consider going then.
Why not just bring your own gun and holster?
Well, because I don't want to bring, I'm never going to fly, and if I bring a gun to Porkfest to not risk going to prison, I'm going to have to drive out of my way down to Florida and then drive up the coast, probably.
States work.
Yeah. So they should just have a thing where you fly there, and then, you know, they meet you at the plane and hand you a loaded gun.
It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Or, you know, a limo service where they pick you up in a car at the airport, and when you get into the car, they hand you a holstered, loaded weapon to use for the week.
Yeah, because I guess you're right. And that is part of the thing with it is, geographically, for a lot of people, it's not easy. I mean, I've lived in the West my whole life. I've traveled all over the West, and I'm fine with that. But I've never been east of the Mississippi. I mean, maybe once when I was on the east side of New Orleans or something. But I don't know. It's just not my bag to go to that general area. There's more regulations. You have to travel, like you said, through states where you're likely to be harassed, or more likely to be harassed. So, I don't know.
Yeah. You know where I got that line? I don't have to go to Porkfest. I am Porkfest. It's a paraphrasing of something the surrealist painter Salvador Dali said. You know him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. I was going to say, you don't know who. Anyway, he did an interview with Playboy magazine one time. And one of the first questions, of course, was, have you ever taken LSD? Because he's so surreal and psychedelic. And he says, I don't need LSD. I am LSD.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, I'd love to go to Porkfest. It sounds like a lot of fun. But maybe we should have multiple Porkfests in different locations, or have that be a tradition of doing like Freedom Day, you know, like in Futurama, where yeah, everybody does it in every city kind of thing.
I like in The Simpsons, there's something called Do What You Want Day in Springfield, mm-hmm, which is kind of like a hippie celebration. It's for the whole family. You know, there's people blowing bubbles and playing frisbee, and the bus driver, Otto, is smoking a joint, and the cop is walking around in his underwear, but still with his belt with his gun on mace on it, but he's in his underwear. And, you know, it's do it. And Kent Brockman, the newscaster, says, and this, here we are at Springfield's Do What You Want Day, which was started to be contrary to the previously held Do As We Say Day, started by German settlers in 1946.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Man. Yeah.
And I think it degenerates into anarchy because Bart starts really doing what he wants, and it just, you know.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. That's the meme. We can't have too much freedom or things will degenerate into anarchy.
That's why you just have it one day a year in Futurama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think if Nixon were the president of Earth, you'd need a Freedom Day once a year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although, if they had a tax monster or you pay your taxes, which would you do?
The pain monster.
Yeah, instead of paying your taxes. I think I'd rather do the pain monster. I'd take that every time.
I love it.
I remember
speaking of LSD, yeah. Did you know that the man who, or not the man who invented LSD, Aldous Huxley made a, on his deathbed, Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, on his bed, unable to speak, Huxley made a written request to his wife for LSD 100 micrograms injected intramuscular. According to her account of his death, she obliged with an injection at 11:45 a.m. and another a couple hours later. He died at 5:20 p.m. at age 69, November 22nd, 1963, several hours after the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Hmm. Wow.
So when they say, you know, do you remember what you were doing when Kennedy was killed? He could say, yeah, I was tripping and dying
on LSD. Yeah. I mean, definitely good for his wife for, you know, commending his final wish. Although I really would not want that to be my state of death, to be tripping on LSD.
Not me either.
No. I want to be as aware as possible when I die.
People say that. Not me, especially if I'm in pain. I want a big injection of morphine to just slip off into the waiting arms of Morpheus.
Yeah, maybe morphine. Maybe something that will dull me, but not something that'll make my brain think things that aren't really existing.
Well, you know, when people die, suddenly their brain produces a tiny bit of DMT to help them not fear death and transition.
Oh, right. You were talking about Rogan and Doug Stanhope were doing that one day, and they have a stand-up bit about it.
Yep. The weekend of Bernie's rant. So Stacey Litz, I decided, she would have been a better libertarian if she'd gone to work for the Obama campaign.
How do you figure?
She would have. She would have been better for the movement and done less harm.
So you think she's done a lot of harm to the movement in the sense that now people are...
Well, I think she's done a lot of harm to three people by getting them put in prison, but she's done harm to the movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although maybe there's a takeaway of, you know, she's strengthened the movement by making people pay more attention to crap like that.
Maybe. But, you know, there was the Stacey Litz effect we were talking about last time, where there are people that are scared now to do favors for other libertarian people.
Ian Freeman says that's in my head and that's not happening on his end. But then again, you know, maybe our fans are more paranoid than his fans.
That's possible, too. And Ian's obviously much more established than us. So, I don't know. And maybe the thing with Ian is it much harder to imagine him being turned state's witness and trying to screw you over.
Oh, because he kind of does things, you know, in front of cops that are illegal and goes to jail. I wouldn't say he likes going to jail. I almost said that, but that's not true.
No, but he has a proven track record of going to jail and not snitching.
He's not afraid of spending you know, some months at least in jail.
Yeah, he'll do that. He's not gonna snitch to avoid getting thrown in the hooscow. He's proven that.
Stacey Litz is lucky, though. She only snitched on people who live by the non-aggression principle. Usually snitches get tortured and murdered, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting question. Where does... what kind of justice do libertarians and anarchists have for something like snitching? I guess snitching really only exists in a statist society, so I don't know if we can really get a libpair description of it, but...
There you go. Yeah, and, you know, I don't even know if I want to get into a thing of, like, can you live by the non-aggression principle and, you know, hurt someone who does something like that? I mean,
I suppose it'd just be ostracizing them, not dealing with them anymore.
Right. But, yeah, it's, you know, and you could say, well, it's a preemptive strike to prevent her from hurting more people. But, you know, I'm not advocating that. I only want to go there. I'm just saying, like, she's lucky. You know, in a lot of worlds, you get killed for that. You get tortured and raped and brutalized and murdered.
Well, I think I go back to the proper thing to do with people, because that's what you do with fraud, too, is, you know, you just stop doing business. Everybody understands, you know, you tell everybody that this person has a bad reputation. You don't want to do business with them. So that's what you do to Stacey Litz. You just say, well, we're not going to be patrons of your media anymore. We're not going to try to do any kind of joint projects with you because you're not a trustable person.
Well, she wants to write a book, too, but wouldn't that be covered by Son of Sam laws? Like, in a lot of states, including Pennsylvania, where she was busted, you cannot profit on a felony. You can't write a book about it and profit on it.
I don't know, man. That's a question for the lawyers wherever she lives at, not for me.
But here's what I think, and this is kind of the closing. We're at the end here. This is the good takeaway of this is, I think that the government harmed themselves with this because the thing that's unspoken in this whole thing is that Silk Road worked. She ordered drugs over and over and over and over and over in large quantities on Silk Road, didn't get ripped off, didn't get bunk stuff, got real stuff. She didn't get busted because of Silk Road. She got busted because she sold to a cop.
Yeah.
So thank you, government, for proving to everyone that Silk Road works.
Nice proof of concept, guys.
Yeah, we said a lot of stuff to get us droned today, too, Nima, but, you know, it's okay. I had a good last supper. These veggies were great. Yep. All right. And on that, I think we're out.
All right. Peace.
Worms. Hello, I'm Michael Dean.
And I'm Nima Vedati.
This educational documentary will undoubtedly upset some people who get a boner from preying on the rights of others.
Therefore, we'd like to say this on record. If either of us are ever facing any felony charges, the thing was planted or the evidence otherwise manufactured.
And if either of us is ever found dead of a drug overdose, a car crash, or an apparent suicide, there was probably a government agency behind it.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.